Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello, I'm Sophie Ellis-Bextor, and welcome to Spinning Plates, the podcast where I speak to busy working women who also happen to be mothers about how they make it work. I'm a singer, and I've released 7 albums in between having my 5 sons, aged 16 months to 16 years, so I spin a few plates myself. Being a mother can be the most amazing thing, but can also be hard to find time for yourself and your own ambitions. I want to be a bit nosy and see how other people balance everything. Welcome to Spinning Plates. Hello, welcome to the last episode in the series. That was nearly a song, and then I decided not to. Welcome to the first episode in the series. No, not first, last. Oh, brain. So after 80 episodes of the podcast, I finally have a winner. I didn't know there was a competition, but it turns out there was, because this week's guest, Sabrina Gayor, turned up at my house with food to feed me and my producer Claire with after we recorded. So we have a winner. Isn't that amazing though? Honestly, not only did she come and see me the day after she arrived back from Thailand, but she also brought food and then cooked this delicious food. We had lamb shawarma and lots of nice pickles and some nice dip things to go with pita bread, and it was all absolutely gorgeous, really, really lovely. But the other thing that was really, really lovely is that she said yes at all to speaking to me, because I've been following Sabrina for a while on Instagram because I love her cooking. I already had a couple of her cookbooks and I really like her cooking, and whenever I've done her recipes they turn out really well. And I noticed that she was posting about her new, well, then boyfriend, but then also talking about his kids. And then when they got married, she put a really gorgeous post up about how much she loves being their stepmom and how she couldn't love them more if they were her own. And I thought, that is so lovely to hear. And I know we've spoken to other guests that have stepchildren, but I haven't spoken to anyone that is exclusively a stepparent. And I thought it's really important to represent that. I have 2 step-parents, and I met my stepdad when I was 7. I think I was about the same age when I met my stepmom, and they definitely helped to raise me. And as you know, I've said this before, but there are many ways to have a family. There are many ways to raise a child, and step-parenting is 100% part of parenting too. And obviously there are a few little factors that are quite significant with step-parenting. It's not as straightforward as some of the other roles. It's you know, it depends on how old the kid is when you meet them. It depends on how custody is split, you know, how much time you're spending together. But it's really significant. And I think even when you're a grown-up, if you find you have a new step-parent, it's significant. You know, who you have in your family defines you, doesn't it? It's a big deal. And it's just so lovely to hear about Sabrina being so enthusiastic. And, you know, she was in her 40s when she met her husband and just seemed to completely get that being in love with him meant, you know, taking it all on and also loving his kids. And I think that's really special. So I think you're going to love the conversation we had. And in the meantime, what else has been going on around here? Well, I've just been packing and I'm actually going away this evening. I'm flying to Australia tonight. And of course, it's not really tonight. It's all of tonight, all of tomorrow. I don't actually land in Sydney till Saturday, which is also the day I have my first gig. I'm going over to Australia to do a little run of festivals, which should be really, really fun. It's called Summer Camp. And it's a LGBTQ plus festival. I picture it in my head as like a sort of travelling pride, basically. So we're going to Sydney, Brisbane, and Melbourne. And happily for me, Richard's coming with me, which is really lovely. I'm actually doing the singing on my own. I'm not taking my band. So I've got my sound guy, Duncan, but Richard's coming along to keep me company, basically. So that's going to be a bit of fun. Because I've got a few, I think it's like 50-50 in terms of like work and downtime, which is quite unusual. Normally there'd be a bit more on the work side. So it's quite nice. I get to have a little explore. And it's always a treat going to travel, I think. And this is my first bit of long haul since pre-you-know-what. So that's all significant. And I'm going to be a little bit boastful here. I have packed hand luggage only. I'm always stupidly pleased with myself, even though I'll probably get there and realise I've brought like nothing I needed and I've left everything at home that would have been great to have. But theoretically, it's going to be good. It's because I've got a few internal flights and I just get a bit paranoid about being separated from my stuff. I like having my things with me, please. But that being said, I have had to pack pretty teeny tiny. So let's see. Let's see how I did. And we've also got a birthday in the house today, which is the 3rd of November, is my fourth baby's 7th birthday, Jesse Jones. And, oh, he was in such a good mood this morning. It's really cute. I've got a whole little thing I always do, putting some balloons up and a big number of whatever number they are, balloon. And then on the table in the playroom, we put all their presents. And he got some cool stuff and he was very excited. And he's gone to school with one of those big happy birthday badges. So yeah, he's very chipper. Being 7 is going to suit him, I can tell. Anyway, in the meantime, I'm very much looking forward to sharing this with you. And maybe you can just picture that while Sabrina and I were chatting, I was having a lovely time chatting to her, made even more lovely by the fact that I knew I was going to eat well afterwards. Hey, don't blame me. I like my food. All right, I will leave you in the capable hands of Sabrina and I will see you on the other side. Well, firstly, I think this is maybe my 80th podcast chat, but you've already won the informal game of the podcast, which was you're the first person to come, not only to my house, but you've brought food.
Am I? Yeah. Oh my God, am
so
I?
So well done. Congratulations, you've won spinning plates.
Bribe them with food, it's the way forward.
It so is. So we can chat for like 2 or 3 minutes and then we can eat, basically.
Oh, cool. Works for me. It's the Persian way. It's the owner. I've never been raised to come to anyone's hands empty-handed.
Really?
And for my whole life of cooking and from my teens, I always arrived at my friends' houses with food for the whatever. I'd be like, don't worry. I don't know. I think it's because that's how I can like love people a bit. And like, don't worry, you know, you're a mum, you're busy, I'll do it. That's always been... And I like doing it. But then sometimes when I'm carrying the shopping, I'm like, not today, but I'm like, why did I agree to this? Because, you know, I'll even work to see what they want to eat or what they're craving. But yeah, wow. It's nice though, I think.
So what you said when you were a teenager?
Yeah, I mean, I would be like, you know, let's watch Grease this weekend and let's all pile in and I'll make mac and cheese or whatever it would
be.
You know, we'd
that's my weekend
agree.
Sorted as well then. I was actually talking about Grease this morning.
Were you?
Yeah.
Oh, nobody can watch that film with me because I know every
me too.
Single word.
I used to watch it with the sound down and do the dialogue. I'm not even joking.
My mother would be like, you turn that stuff off, stop talking. I can't, I'm going to literally turn it off if you don't stop saying the words. But it's like mentally ingrained into you. I don't think you know you're doing it. And then when the songs start, like, it's just worse, isn't it? Because the music. Just love it.
Although I have to say, because I was walking to school with my six-year-old Jesse, and I said, I sang a bit of Grease, and then he said, what's that? And he said, what's it about? I said, we have to watch it. And I'm prepping it better this time, because when I tried to watch it with my now 13-year-old Kit, he was probably about 8, and he was very disappointed because he thought it was going to be about ancient Greece.
And you're like, no, kid, this is super cool.
Like stuff you put in your hair, dude. So with Jesse, I was explaining. And then I was like, so there's Sandy and Danny pretends. And as I spoke, the plot is really bizarre.
It's quite twisted.
And then Sandy just has a whole makeover just to fit in with Danny.
I know. And then what? You listen to some of the lyrics of some of the songs and you're like, oh, that's a little bit. I don't think you can say some of those things anymore. Like, ew, that's kind of creepy.
It's got swearing.
Like,
and,
I don't want to be left alone with that guy. He's not that cool, actually. Like,
it's true. It's very true.
It's different.
Sorry, I went from being down a little like Grease road there, but I can't. It can't be mentioned and me not grip hold of that. But what are you up to at the moment? When we start with here and now, what's happening in your life? Oh, you only just got back from Thailand yesterday.
Yeah. So I knew that I was going to be away for a few weeks, so I had to kind of make the rest element count because I just literally hit the ground running from today.
Okay.
So just got so much on trying to resume like book tour. I had a book that came out in August, but well known that August is not the time to do touring. So for books anyway, because everybody's on holiday. So it happened a bit in September, then I went away and then I kind of resumed between now and December. So it's like supper clubs and meetings and, you know, pop-ups and cookery classes and you name it. It's just all happening because you got a book, you got to do the legwork. So
this book, did you spot it on the bookshelf where my
actually. I was like, gonna play that one cool.
I said to Richard this morning, she's gonna think I've placed these all here. There's like three of your books on that shelf.
Play cool, don't look too long at the shelf.
So your current book is the everyday one, is that
yes,
right?
Yes. Yeah.
And it's, I say Persiana, but
yeah,
is that right?
Yeah, 100%. The only person that pronounces it wrong is my own publisher. She's American. She's this, sweetie, I'm just going to call it Persiana. And I was like, it isn't Persiana. It's like, so I've kind of given up, but everybody else seems to do it right.
And with the supper clubs, is that you literally recreating what you used to do with having people around and cooking for them again?
So I've always been cooking in the house since I was a kid because none of my family cook, like not at all. My mother, like if you ask her to switch the oven on, you just literally have to watch her go into like a state of genuine blind panic and anxiety because she doesn't know how to do it. And it will take like, it could take 10 minutes and then she would probably have like tears in her eyes and start wobbling. Like, you know, it's just not her domain. And
it really
I realize,
isn't, is it?
Yeah, I think it's because she was kicked out of the kitchen when she was a kid. And a lot of people, especially in cultures where either the family or strong cooks, they go, no, out, you know, and they don't let the children be in the kitchen. More so perhaps in, you know, previous decades, I would say. Now you're like hopeful that the kids are going to stay in there, learn and take over from you. But in our case, we had a house cook, I think, from when my mum, because my mum's mum and dad were working. Mm-hmm. So quite common in some Eastern countries. Doesn't necessarily mean you're rich, but, you know, you have
so
somebody.
So when you were born, is it?
When my mother was a kid.
Oh, okay.
So she was ousted out of the kitchen.
Oh, I see. And she was little.
Yeah. So when I was a kid here in the early 80s, I grew up watching like Ken Hom and Meta Jeffrey and was like obsessed with this cookery stuff. And I loved Chinese food. And I connected with Meta Jeffrey because even though I didn't know too much about Indian food, all the little plates and the breads and the curries kind of look like our stews. And so Ken Hom and Meta Jeffrey had a lot to do with my love of food. Mm. I was probably took over in the house by 10 or 11 as the cook.
Wow.
Because nobody else was into it at all. And my mother was like, you know, go, play.
She could see you had a passion and an interest.
100%. You know, the wok revolution was a big thing in England in the early 80s.
We're pretty much the same age, so all your reference points are the same as mine.
Okay, good. I'm glad. Because you have to sometimes, there's that vague expression of like, huh? Sometimes in people,
I remember the wok
lot younger
revolution.
Than me. Yeah. And, you know, Uncle Ben's was like, it was the first ready jarred sauces and things like that. So everybody, I think they said 8 out of 10 people owned a wok in England because of Ken Hom back in the 80s. And so I suppose
as well, if you're a famous chef in those days, you had such a direct line to like huge millions.
Huge audience. Yeah, it's not huge, the same concentrated now. Yeah. Audience, because we only had four channels.
I think three for the majority, wasn't it?
Exactly.
Yeah.
So that really helped me because stir frying is like the easiest way to start cooking because you're just chopping things up. You pick a protein if you eat meat, and then you pick veg. And, you know, I probably came up with some horrendous things. But I also learned how to make things like wonton soup because of Ken Hom. Because I used to pass this Chinese supermarket on the way to school, which is crazy because it's not very common where I live anyway. Mm. And pass ginger and garlic and, you know, things that weren't really in supermarkets. Like ginger was definitely a hard to find thing in the 80s.
Yeah.
Garlic probably was in there, but... So I just experimented and, having people over, started cooking Christmas suppers. I think that's probably like the traditional.
Yeah.
Because my grandma's idea of catering for Christmas just doesn't bear thinking about. I think
so she didn't cook much as well, your grandma?
No, she didn't. Thank God she didn't, because she did actually, to be fair, I think my memory has sort of pushed things out a bit because she didn't like cooking and she was a very glamorous lady. You would have definitely approved of her wardrobe. Very, very sort of stylish and, you know, young in the 50s with all those amazing dresses and whatnot. But yeah, she didn't. Then when we came to England in 1979, she had to because her husband had just died. You know, we were refugees, moved into the flat that my mother had here and you're forced to feed, to cook. So, but she didn't have to cook every night because we were always out as well at other families' houses. And her sister was kind of the knockout cook of the family. Oh, wow. So I had one person in a family of hundreds of people that is a really good cook.
You only need one if you're looking for someone to like.
Oh my God. I mean, I'm still writing recipes now. And then as I'm writing the intros, I'm like, this is a recipe. Oh, this is a recipe of my grandma's sister. And I wish I'd asked her more, and I wish I came into this career earlier. But I certainly spent a lot of time at her, you know, kitchen tables, pretty much just maybe eye height at the same height as the counter. I used to steal a lot of meatballs. She used to make like tiny little meatballs, like, and you know, Eastern types were really good. Like they'll spend the whole day in the kitchen cooking and then freezing it and then, or, you know, batching it for whatever. So she used to make these tiny little meatballs like the size of your thumbnail.
Mm.
And I would probably eat.
They sound very pinchable, actually.
Very pinchable. And she'd just fry them off. So I'd eat a few whilst they were being fried off so she couldn't tell. And then she'd put some in the platter and I'd eat some of those just to cool down. And then she'd put the rest in the fridge and then I'd probably eaten more than half of them. And then she'd cotton on and absolutely scream blue bloody murder in the house. But yeah, just all these memories. And she was married to an Iraqi. So I had like the great benefit of like an added cuisine, you know, in my upbringing, which was, I mean, their food is unbelievable. It's so good. So it's like double bubble, really, really great. And also for me, hosting is something I was taught because when I was five, from the time I was five, my grandma would invite all her glamorous ladies for what I now know to be like full on gossip girly sessions. But, you know, when you're a kid, you just don't know, right?
Yeah.
And they'd be like, okay, thank you, which would signal, right, you know, off you go now. And they would probably, God knows, probably worse than us, I would say, that lot. But, you know, she would be like, get the tray ready, you know, put the teacups on there, get the tea ready, because when your aunts come in, I want you to, you know, she'd encourage me and we would serve.
Mm.
So I learned from an early age that if your auntie runs out of tea, you ask her if she'd like another one, then you pass the biscuits round, then you pass the fruit round, then you pass the nuts round. That's very Persian.
Yeah.
We don't have you in a house. We just constantly feed you, even if it's not a mealtime.
This
even
is
if
great.
You said no.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Just constantly.
I'm down with all of the above. but it's interesting, when I heard that your mum and your grandma weren't really that interested in cooking, it threw me a tiny bit, only because, well, not least because obviously it's become so much, like, massive part of your life, but also because I was thinking, if you were a refugee, so you travel from Iran in 1979, you're only two, you're normally the way you'd learn about your culture, like my picture, the way you learn about where you came from would be through the medium of food primarily.
I know.
And actually you're out having all sorts of other stuff.
Yeah.
So you're, I suppose, when you're that tiny, the notion of being a refugee, you only really would see that reflected in, I guess, your mum and your grandma.
Yeah.
Would you about even...
I mean, that just should be.
Yeah, you're just submerged in culture, aren't you? Yeah. You're just getting on with the business of being you and you're that small. You're not... I mean, presumably you've got no memories of...
I don't have any memories. Yeah. And I'm quite grateful, actually, because those are not, you know, leaving your homeland. Yeah. Even though, you know, we were very lucky that we were on a legitimate flight out of there rather than, you know, the horrible travesties that some people have to deal with when they're fleeing their country. But, you know, we were on one of the last legitimate flights out of Iran. So I don't remember anything. What I do remember is... being small here in England and having my mother as this great sort of catalyst for me to explore food and love food, because she loved different treats. And I'm not talking about the Middle East and stuff, because that didn't really enter my memory from a young child. You know, it was teaching me how to eat chopsticks, taking me to like Benihana, you know, which now it's like, yeah, Benihana, whatever.
No, that was really exotic.
Oh my God, so exotic. Yeah. Onion volcano with smoke coming out of it. Yeah, yeah. And then they're just chopping stuff and throwing stuff around in front of you. You know, that's pretty unusual in the 80s for kids. It's pretty unusual now. And, you know, croissants, which were not a thing here.
Yeah.
She was just like, I'm going to take you for this cool bread thing from France and it's got ham and cheese in it. And I was like, what? Oh, this is great. Like, you know, so she got my appetite literally up for, you know, having a sort of thirst for knowledge and a hunger for the food as well. Just to explore things and eat different things. Took me for Thai food and took me for all different kinds of things that perhaps if she was just a cook that didn't want to cook at home and didn't like cooking, we'd probably be eating really safe, boring things because she wasn't into it.
Yeah.
So maybe I'm lucky that, yes, she couldn't cook, but she definitely pushed the boat out when it came to introducing me to new things, whether I like them or not.
I think that's brilliant. I mean, there's not many better ways to raise a kid than keeping them with their eyes open like that. And like, let's try this, let's do that.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, those are all the memories you've got now, haven't you, from when you were small? That's really magic. And you're still super close to your mum now.
Yeah, I still am. She'll still fully drive 200 miles for like a good pie or something like that. Like 100% we are like, should we drive to, I don't know, let's drive to Ilkley in Yorkshire, like another part of Yorkshire from where we live. Let's go and get that sausage meat from the butchers. Like, you know, because we are still, she's quite adventurous. She's quite young at heart. And, you know, she would think nothing of driving somewhere to have a good rice dish or a great pie or like a Kurdish, you know, mincemeat roll or whatever, you know, like we're kooky
that. Yeah. So why is it that your book centers so much on the Middle Eastern flavors if you're trying so many things? What was it that resonated?
I think when I first came to the attention of other people as a cook, I was 35, it was 2011. My very first supper club was a joke. Like I literally was a joke I made on Twitter and it went viral and it was in the newspapers the next day. And I was like, oh my God, this is... And it wasn't a Persian supper club or a Middle Eastern supper club. It was...
So what was the supper club? Just for people who don't know, that's you literally had people come round, didn't you?
Total strangers coming round to your house is what the original supper clubs were. Mm. Total strangers coming round to your house for a set priced menu where you couldn't provide alcohol because obviously you need a liquor license. Mm-hmm. So they'd bring a bottle and then, you know, hopefully if they didn't rob you blind at the end of it, which they never did with me, but I heard some pretty ropey stories. But, you know, you kind of... Yeah, that's how you can make a name or introduce a new food or whatnot.
Yeah.
I didn't really know what I was doing. I'd lost my job working in marketing in the city. It was the end of the credit crunch and, you know, I took a hit. And so I did a supper club based on an American chef that was coming to Harrods to do a pop-up, Thomas Keller of French Laundry and Per Se. And I'm a huge fan. So I was waiting the whole year to go for that announcement. And then just as they announced it, 250 quid, boom, I lost my job. And I was like, oh no, as much as I could go into even more debt to go to this, that's not really sensible. And I just joked on Twitter like, oh, you know, French Laundry pop up, looks like it's a no-go for me. It's 250 quid a head. God, I should probably just do French Laundrette and charge £2.50. Ha ha, boom. And then people are like, I'd go to that. And let me know when you do that. I'd love to work there. And I'll provide you with cattle for meat. I'll provide you with cheeses. And it just went, And so we did it for charity because that was the right thing to do in my mind. But it was nuts. I was like plugging in my phone into the wall and it would like ringing all hours of the day for like 4 weeks.
Wow.
So, yeah, it was great. Did it. Wonderful people involved to help, you know, make it happen. And then somebody said to me, that was great. I'm so happy we got to attend that. But like, when are you fancy doing a supper club with Persian food? And I was like, what? They're like, yeah, you know, I've seen you cook a few things on like Insta, like not Insta, Twitter back then. And I was like, really? You want Persian food? I was a bit nervous because if you've ever watched Big Fat Greek Wedding, you might understand this. If you ever go to school with food of your own culture, certain time in a certain time, probably in the 80s and 90s, you would have most definitely be subjected to the what's in your lunchbox, moussaka. Oh, moussaka. Like that's my entire teenage years at secondary school. Anytime that my grandmother was like, this is what you're taking to school. I'm like, no, not that. Whereas now kids are like, oh my God, yeah, I've got sushi. I've got like Syrian this and, you know, Mongolian that, and it's fine. It's totally cool. But back then it was deeply uncool and you'd get bullied and, you know, teased and whatnot. So I was afraid that people wouldn't like Persian food. But I was very wrong. Really, like, way totally off the mark, thankfully. And so I started doing them as a job, as an income.
Yeah.
To make money. I had massive debts and, you know, suddenly lost my job and I was 35 and I'm like, oh my God, I can't even buy like a lump of cheese. This is so embarrassing. I've never had that in my life because I've always worked since I was 10, you know, delivering papers, working in this shop, flower girl, you know, all of these. I've done everything. And so, yeah, it took off, but it was a hard sell at the beginning and nobody wanted to come to my house to eat food because they're like, is it not in Hackney? Is it not in South London? It's a bit far West London because West London has this sort of stigma where it's just too far for most people because trendy
people. But it's not. Look how easy really we find isn't. It.
I think it's a little bit. I think it's a little bit better now. But when I was like Kensington, they're like Kennington, and I'm like Kensington. They're like, let us know when you come to Kennington. And I'm like, but I'm never going to come to Kennington because I don't live there. But then after. Thankfully, after some, you know, hard work and spreading that greatest form of PR known to man, word of mouth, you know, I had a lot of business and a lot of people will be coming. And then I had to keep telling people no. And that was the new thing that was freaking me out. So
well, how brilliant that people were so hungry for it in every sense. How flipping brilliant. Because I think 35 is one of those ages where if you find yourself like everything's gone pear-shaped, I mean, it's devastating at any age, but at that age, you're thinking, I really should have this
should have my stuff
sorted,
together, yeah.
Yeah.
It's bad timings, but it's not too late to sort of get a whole new career.
How exciting
on track.
Is that?
Yeah. I mean, I always worked in hospitality, so this is something that people don't factor in. I worked in hotels and restaurants and catering companies. I've done every job in a hotel.
Yeah.
So like if I ever have anyone be snooty about it, I'm like, yeah, I did that. I've cleaned rooms. I've done reception. I've worked in reservations. I've worked in sales, marketing, all of it. So I've worked in Pret. I've worked in McDonald's. I've worked in a Chinese supermarket. Like the list is long.
Yeah.
Which if I could get away with sending my stepkids to do things like that now, like I constantly, I guess I joke because they're not my children fully. I can't really say that, but constantly like, when are you getting a job? Like, I want some rent contribution, wink, wink. You know, they're like, oh, what? Just like horrified. And I was like, I had jobs at your age. And they're like, what? Oh, no, that's not even legal. I'm like, yes, it is. Or it used to be maybe, so.
Well, you mentioned your stepkids there because I was thinking, you know, with all the things that have, the roads that have led us today, because obviously this is a podcast where I speak to working women who happen to be mothers. Mm. And I was really excited to speak to you because I feel we haven't really represented the step-parent community.
Yeah.
And step-parenting is a huge... I have step-parents, step-mum, my step-dad. I was very close to him. Sadly, he died a couple of years ago. But so I know what it's like to be a step-child in that. And it's...
Give me hope, Sophie. Give me hope.
Well, it's funny. There's tons of hope. Tons of hope. But also, I was thinking, well, firstly, how does it feel that that's now where you're at, that you're a step-parent?
Oh, my God. If you... Honestly, if you spoke to me pre-COVID, I was in this wonderful place where, you know, I will just tell you here, I had always wanted children and to get married. That was always like a, probably a crazy, stupid teen fantasy that then becomes a little bit more real in your 20s. And then you think, okay, well, it's 30 and it hasn't happened. And, you know, that kind of thing. And then you just chill out about it. Well, I personally had chilled out about it. And I got to the place where I was 40 and I thought, hasn't happened. And you know what? I'm okay with that. Like, I love my freedom. I talk to my friends who have kids and partners, and it's not perfect. My freedom is perfect, you know? And yeah, okay, maybe I'm not thinking about, will I have anyone when I'm older and things like that, both from the partner and the child perspective. But whatever it is, I can get on board and embrace it. So I was like, 40s for me was about, I loved where I was at. It wasn't what I had chosen or what I thought was written for me. But hey, you know, I could embrace the good parts of it. But then if you told me I would have had two stepkids from a divorced man, because I always felt like I'd rather die than marry somebody who was divorced. In fact, I don't even want to get married and, oh, no, no kids. You know, that's where I was. So I'd probably think you were crazy. But they always say it's like life is what happens when you're busy making other plans. And yeah, it happened. Boy, did it happen. And it happened just pretty much. It, you know, peaked at the beginning of COVID. So it happened at a time where other things, other horrible things were happening to everyone, you know, all around the world. But I'm glad it did because I love my husband and he is just the nicest, most decent human being I think I've ever met in my life. I don't know what I did to deserve him and his patience. And his kids are little monkeys, but I love them. Like, I don't think I could love them any more if they were my own. The only difference is that I'm still new and treading because I've only been married for a year, is that it is like being a minesweeper. It's a minefield.
Yeah.
Having stepkids. It's a minefield having kids, I think, from what I am, you know, deal with. I've been speaking a lot to people that have their own children, not necessarily stepchildren. But a lot of people, actually, social media really has been good for this because a lot of people write to me when I just randomly do a post with the kids and you know, they're like, oh, God, I think you're doing an amazing job. I'm like, really? They're like, yeah, yeah, I can see it. You know, you seem really loving and whatever. I think that kind of reassurance is great because I don't really know what I'm doing because there isn't a handbook for step-parenting. You just know to tread carefully.
Yeah.
The most important thing at the top of that tree for me is to make sure they don't feel that you're trying to not replace their mother, you're trying to take their father away from them. That's the top of the tree for me.
Mm.
I definitely am not trying to replace a mother figure for them, so I'm not worried about that. It's not. Mm. It's very low on the list of things because it's, you know, I think they know that. It's not an issue. But there has occasionally been little whispers where I can see that, oh, I think he's starting to feel a bit like maybe I've been with his, I can just see it, a little bit of insecurity momentarily. And I go, sure, kid, sit with your dad. It's all right. I'll move over. No worries. Like, I always make it like it's no big deal. If you're jostling with that in your head, kid, don't worry. I'm not here to be clingy with your dad. It's your weekend with him. It's all good. Like, I kind of know my place.
God, that's so lovely and sensitive of you, though. I do think that's a very empathetic.
I think it's really important because...
It is, but that's a very subtle read you're doing there because yeah. Those little signals, they probably don't even know that's what they're feeling half the time because kids don't really think like that.
They kind of... I can just see them. And it could be just me sitting on the sofa with their dad and them just wanting to be... Because they love, like, worship their dad. They want to be the ones on either side of their dad. So yeah. I just shift. It's not all the time.
No, but that's very thoughtful. And now a word from our sponsor, which this week is the brilliant all-new Dacia Jogger, which is an award-winning 7-seater car with plenty of space for family and friends. And I'm joined in this special segment by Kit, who's my 13-year-old, and Jessie, who is my 6-year-old. Now, guys... Do you think having a big car is pretty essential for our family?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
It is, isn't it? What do we feel like when we're travelling around and we're all together and we need a bit more room?
A bit cramped.
Can be a bit cramped, can't it? But...
Feel a little bit happy.
You'd feel happy if you had more space.
Yeah.
What are you doing?
We're talking about cars, Mickey. Do you think we need a bigger car? More space?
A small car.
A small car?
No.
No, you're not having a small
car. No, I want a small car for
mine. Yeah, well, there you go. Mickey, Mickey wants
Jessie,
a car.
Jessie, you have a big car and I have a small car.
That's a good idea. Now, what do we like to do with our car? Where do we... What's the
drive. Sort of place?
Well, drive, yes, but Mickey's three.
And beep.
I only ever use the horn.
And beep, beep.
We like to go together to a lot of different places.
We do. We take the... We drive to festivals.
And we sometimes crash.
Mickey, we never crash.
If we would crash, then we wouldn't be here.
Mum, I don't know.
If we would crash, then we wouldn't be here.
And what about when we take it camping? We like to go camping sometimes.
What about we go on a new car?
Yeah, well, a new...
Well, I don't really want to... Mummy, I want a small yellow car.
You want a small yellow car?
No,
shall I... What about a big Dacia Jogger?
No, I want a small yellow car. I want a small yellow car.
Okay, Mickey's going to have his own car. That's how much he wants his own space. He actually wants his own car. Because Mickey obviously entered the family when most of the seats were already taken. That's what happens. And sometimes in the car, do we sometimes have to sit people so they're not sat next to each other?
Yeah.
Yes, like, who do we have to sit apart? Kit and Ray. Yeah, we have to sit Kit and Ray apart.
Mummy, this is Godzilla. Mummy, Mama,
yeah?
Mama.
Yes, I'm listening.
This is Godzilla and this is
God. What kind of car would Godzilla drive?
Godzilla can't drive because he's too big. He can drive a big, big car.
And he could take it on adventures. Or I like it when we go camping with our car. And I like it when we drive to festivals. I always love going to a festival with you guys. We've had so many fun outings, haven't we? I think the Dacia could cope with taking us to festivals and could cope with taking us to our camping. Well, thank you, Kit. Thank you, Jessie. Thank you, Mickey. And if you want to find out more about the Dacia, you can head to Dacia, which is dacia.co.uk, where you can find out all about this brilliant car, the Dacia Jogger, and how it is built for adventure. I think it could definitely cope with our family adventures.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HourEnergy.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HourEnergy.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
But also, it's so interesting because you literally used a word that I was thinking of this morning when you were saying about, you know, all the mines. I was thinking it is a minefield because I was like, you know, obviously there's lots and lots of ways to form a family. You definitely do not have to have biological parents to form a family.
No, 100%.
Like this, we know this. So I was like, so what is it about step-parenting that makes it complex? And I was thinking, well, it's because you walk into a situation. There's a situation that's gone on before you. So you've got to kind of read that. And obviously it's complicated because there's loads of variables, you know, how custody is split, how old the kids are, the nature of the reason why the parent is not with any, you know, all of these things, all of these factors. But ultimately you have to come into it and you fall for the person you fall for. And if they've got children, I guess that just becomes part of the package, right?
Yeah, 100%. And it's no joke what you undertake because you have to put, like, you have to put your shit aside. Like, you really need to park whatever issues. You have to divide all your everythings. Whatever you want to do, you have to look at it with a completely different angle 50% of the times because that's how often we have them. And it's, you know, when I met my husband, I did my damnedest to put him off. This is the only way I can explain it. I don't know. I do this thing when my friends point this out. You do this thing where, you know, you attract them all in good faith, and then, you know, they come towards you, and then you do everything in your power to push them away with, like, not crazy behavior, don't get me wrong.
No, but
like,
just all gets a bit serious.
And not cheating or any of, nothing no. like that, but trying to give them, like, shocking factors about me, things that would make them think, I guess it's a test, it's an insecurity yeah. thing to kind of, well, this is me, and, you know, I don't
want
this.
Do you still love me when I do this? Do you still love me when I do that?
I bet
that?
You won't. So if you're going to leave now.
Exactly.
You know, those are kind of not so subtle subtleties, shall yeah. we say, that a wall goes up a few weeks after the settle in, you know, mm-hmm. that wall goes up to just test because yeah. you just think, oh God, I've had this has gone wrong before. I don't want to get hurt.
Absolutely.
You know, all of that kind of stuff. So I just was like, I don't know how this is going to work. And he was like, why? And I was like, because you got kids and I don't like noise. And I was like, I'm abundantly aware that I'm sounding like the most selfish human being that ever existed, but I'm 40 something and I know myself.
Yeah. I don't think it's selfish at all as well, because you were aware that it's a big deal.
It's a big deal, and, you know, people have different kinds of kids and different kinds of households.
Of course.
Like, if I walk into my cousin's house, she has four sons that honestly I love like they are my own. And they are wonderful, inquisitive, interesting, intelligent boys. But that house volume is like, because my cousin is loud. And, you know, that's just, yeah. but it's okay for them. Like, honestly, I can't hear myself think when I'm in that house sometimes.
And yeah, I'm just, I know.
But I can
feeling.
Say, because they're my blood, I can go, oh my God, all of you, shut up. I can't hear your mother. You know, and it's yeah. not a problem. You know, they're like, oh, auntie, you know, we just love each other. But what is the discipline like with somebody you love and the relationship they have with their children? You know, a lot of things have changed, because Stephen won't mind me saying that, you know, he loved me in a way that he wanted to make room for me. And he always said to me, I know a lot of people say that nothing is as important as my kids, and my kids are everything, and they will always be the most important thing in my life, and nothing else matters. He goes, I don't operate that. Of course, my children are my children. I love them. And yes, of course, they're my number one. But, you know, I see the place for you being almost joint that. So I will take a lot of what you say into consideration. And I just said, I'm so scared, because I don't know. I don't want to ask for the things that I want in case you find them unreasonable, and then we argue and then it's all over. So he's made loads of changes. And actually, I'm really tough. I'm a tough stepmom, super loving, super giving. Hope I never have to raise my voice, but I lay all the foundations down that I had growing up, because I'm quite happy with how my parents, yeah. my mum and my grandma raised me. And I'm tough. And I'm like, you know, for example, when your grandparents ring the doorbell, you know, get up off your ass. No, I'm playing a game. I don't care. Move. Go and say hello to your grandparents. Say goodbye to your grandparents. Your grandparents have just FaceTimed. Say hello and then go and do what you want to do. That's how I was raised. This is just some levels of common courtesy, clearing your plate. And they hated that at the beginning. They were like, what? And I'm like, and I quickly nipped in there with the sort of Kevin and Perry, I'm not your slave. You know, I threw that on them before they threw it on me. And they were like, oh. So I think I was, maybe because I'm older, and they're not mine, so I'm not run ragged and knackered like most parents are, quite rightly so. I was a little bit more, probably better prepared in some senses, that I could go, I know any minute now, one of these days, these boys are going to go, you're not my mother, or, you know, I'm bored, I'm not your slave. And I thought, so let me just do it first.
Yeah. Like,
you know, I will just get it out the way so they can't say it, because I'm just like, oh, you're just copying me now, you know. So you got to be clever with them. But I do always, no matter what I say, I go, the only reason I'm saying this is because it's a bit hard for me, boys. I do the cooking, the cleaning. Your dad does the laundry and this. And sometimes on top of work, it's difficult. So I want to explain why I'm asking them to do this.
Yeah.
Not that I'm just enslaving them in some kind of strange child labor, but just understand, kid, there's a reason that parents ask children to do these things. Even though they don't care,
yeah.
it will set it in there and make it kind of softens the blow for them a little bit.
Wow, so I'm actually just sitting here feeling very impressed by you, actually.
I'm really impressed.
Well, there's a few things that are impressing me. First of all, I think it sounds like you and your other half walked into this as real grown-ups, very conscious of setting up something that could actually is a proper family environment.
Yeah.
And I think that's a gorgeous thing for the kids, because what you're talking about there is not the strictness that, like, I don't even think that's strict. What you've done there is just provide a tone for the house because it's the household that they live in too.
Yeah.
And every house has a tone.
Yeah.
Even if the tone is equally, you could say it's really would be really tough if you didn't take any role, because then you're not really engaging. The fact that you say hello and goodbye to your grandparents is something that you care about and you want for them to be part of that as well.
100%.
I honestly think that's way less tough than the bit where you don't take it on because you don't see them as children you're partly raising, which you are, because, you know, I'm raised by all of my parents. It sounds like a weird sentence, but my step-parents raised me too, 100%.
Yeah.
So it's all those things, they all factor in. So I think that's brilliant. But also I'm thinking, geez, I do too much for my... I really should talk to my kids about what you said about the sort of mental load of all the other stuff that goes on. Because I think children don't always understand there's a whole world out there. And sometimes you're doing it because, hey, it's your childhood. But other times I'm like, actually, it's good for them to understand that everybody's putting their weight and doing stuff. So I think... Yeah, I'm impressed. How did you have so much you knew you wanted to do when you brought that forward to you and thinking you weren't going to do it at all?
I don't know. You know, the one thing, when I was younger, every partner I ever had and people that were just related to me were always like, you're going to be a really good mum someday. And I was always like, yes, I want to have a football team of boys. I always was like, I grew up, you know, and a lot of girls want girls. I was like, well, God, ugh. No, I couldn't think of anything worse. Only because I was suspicious that they'd probably turn into me, and that's probably not something it would just be hard work to monitor, because I'd be like, I know you've been smoking or like whatever nightmare that I drove my mum mad for. And she was chilled. Not that she's chilled when the bad stuff would happen, but she just knew that poking an angry bear isn't a solution, and you just got to kind of, this is, you know, the rite of passage, and you've got to accept it and say, I'm here if you need me and, you know, make sure you call me type thing and just be good. I'm not like that. But I kind of knew, I don't know, maybe years of watching Super Nanny as well, things that. And kind of talking, I've learned a lot about body language with children.
Mm-hmm.
And I know, for example, with my eldest one, he doesn't like to be embarrassed. He doesn't like to be shouted at in front of other people.
Yeah.
And I've literally in two and a half years probably shouted 3 times.
Wow.
But like when I do...
That's really serious then, isn't it? That's a big deal.
Frightening.
Yeah.
But the only times I actually have, one was disrespecting me and the other two was disrespecting their dad. They wouldn't dare disrespect me. And the other one was because he was flustered and I was just like, calm down, kid. He's like, no. And I was like, and he was shouting in my face.
Yeah.
And, you know.
Well, every family has flare-ups anyway. I mean, that's
100%. But this is where you revert to just being a person and not a stepmom anymore, because you're not used to it, having someone shout in my face for long enough. Then you forget you're a step-parent. You're just this person with somebody screaming at you. And then in order to silence the situation, you start screaming at them.
Absolutely. But it happens as you know, my kid's parent, you get that thing as well, where you're like, hang on a minute. I don't feel like I'm your mum. This is just unpleasant.
I don't like this. I might be good at it, but like I don't actually like confrontation, but I'm good at it if I need to be. But it's not what I would choose. So it's like, it's a lesson learning every day and trying to treat them as two individuals, because they pretty much hate each other right now, which is totally, I'm guessing from my conversations with other people now and their children, that it's common.
Yes.
But I didn't know. They absolutely hate each other. And then there was a picture that I recently posted this weekend that got loads of attention. It was both of them when they went to, you know, they're from Newcastle and they support, you know, Newcastle football team, mad about football. They went to the match on the weekend with their dad. And there's a picture of Connor, the eldest one, you know, with his arm around Ollie, and there was like, oh, they're so cute. And I was like, yeah, but that probably meant he had him in a headlock, really. About, you know, there's never, that's not common, the affection thing. But I do try and treat them as differently as possible and understand that Ollie doesn't like certain things, Connor doesn't like certain things. And when I ever tell them off, even if it's just a soft, you know, like, please don't do that, I will make sure I pull them apart because the other one will use it against
him. Oh, yeah, all of that.
So I just go, no, go away. No, I'm having a word with Ollie. Off you go. No, I won't let one use that as collateral against the other to kind of tease him. So I'm careful.
And when you said, like, it's quite hard, there's no handbook. So where do you...
I should write one.
Yeah, go for it.
And there's, like, 150 blank pages.
It's just a doodle book.
Chapter one, how to handle them. Like a picture of me shrugging. Like, chapter two, how to deal with them, me head in hands. Just like, well, a picture
also,
special.
Historically, stepmothers haven't come across great in culture either.
No, I call myself stepmonster.
Yeah, there you go.
And my husband is like, don't do that. And now I'm like, why? And he's like, because you're not a stepmonster and you don't want to give them the idea that it's okay to repeat that in public. And I'm like, oh, okay. You know, and they go, oh, you know, my stepmonster, like, stepmonster, is he being abused? Or like,
yeah.
So I have to be careful.
But, you know, we've got, like, evil stepmother. Just generally speaking, stepmothers, it's time for there to be a little bit more of a balance, I think, in how they're represented. Because it's often seen as this, as you say, quite predatory.
Yeah.
And I think you were so astute when you said about... not just about, you know, this concept of replacing the mum, but actually about the having the dad's ear. I think that's really astute, you know, if it's...
I think it's important to not dilute. I think children of a divorce, especially one where they're just about old enough to sort of know that a divorce is happening, even if they didn't know why or what for or whatnot, they know it's happened. I wouldn't say the damage, because I don't like that, assuming that somebody, I'm a child of divorce and I'm not damaged by it. You know what
that's
I mean?
A thing but that happens.
Yeah.
You don't know any different, do you?
I think there is a division of parental guidance, and it's important to make sure that you're kind of showing them that it doesn't need to be too different and that there's stability. I'm always trying to do that, always trying to get meals at the table. Like, I'm really, you know, kind of a stickler for that, because also I never grew up having that myself.
Oh, that's so true. I suppose you haven't.
Yeah.
Isn't the map, the roadmap for that as well is different, isn't it?
It is a little bit different, and also, and a lot would have just been because our living room didn't really have space for a dining table.
Mm.
You know what I mean? Like, that would have literally been my reason for that. So I think it's funny because sometimes, especially on weekends, we try and do this where there's a little bit more time and I don't have to create two meals at night, one to suit the boys when they come from school and one to feed the adults.
Mm.
We try and just do it a little bit earlier than my comfortable meal time. So we do it like 7:30 because we eat like 8:30, 9:00. I'm quite late with that.
Mm-hmm.
And so we sit down and then they love my mum. They think she's, you know, batshit is the funny, you know, they think she's a little wacky because she says some really funny stuff. And I actually had enjoying them listening to her and laughing because I think she's funny.
Well, how nice is that, that relationship developing?
It's nice. And I tell them really funny things like, I'll give you a fiver each if you call her Grandma Gail. And she hates it. She's like, tell him to stop calling me grandma. And I was like, here you go. Fiver for you. Like, you know, we've taken them to llama farms with my mum, and like, oh, the shenanigans that go down. We go, you know, we've done Halloween parties and family face paintings and like stuff that, you know, I haven't had maybe,
even
though I'd had with my mum, but that bigger family setting.
Yeah.
And like really kooky stuff of dressing up the house and doing crazy things for Christmas. And we play, you know, there's this little game on the mobile, Heads Up.
Oh, yeah.
Have you seen it? We play a lot of Heads Up.
That's the one with the, like, it's basically like, get who am I sort of thing. There.
Yeah, yeah. You stick the phone and it's like an animal or something like that.
Yeah.
And, you know, having my mum act out what
she
thinks,
must be brilliant.
That's hilarious.
I'd like to play that with your mum.
Literally love, they love that. So she kind of gets involved. So it's good for her as well, because I said to her, you know, you've become a grandma. She's like, I have not. But actually, she has a particular bond with the younger one, because I think the older one is a teenager. But
yeah.
Every now and again, he'll give her a little window in. But, you know, she's a lot like the younger ones.
Well, that's nice.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Because I was thinking, obviously, your husband came with his kids, but you came with your mum.
Like I did. I mean, quite frankly, my mum could easily peel it back, but my husband adores my mother, which is quite frankly really annoying sometimes. But he's done a lot to make her feel like she is welcome in, I mean, it's my house, but that he just always says, you know, your mum's lovely and, you know, they're not going to be around forever. So, and I'm thinking, what a nice man, you know, like just gives me more reasons to love him. The good thing about my mum is she tends to spend all her time, and yes, she does have the biggest bedroom, in my house, because she has a little office in there and she's like Skyping her friends or walking around the garden, FaceTiming people around the world. And like, she's living the life of Riley.
Sounds good.
And she's not a homebody.
Mm.
So she likes to be out when we like to, it doesn't clash, shall I say. So never the twain shall meet, or at least not very often anyway. We are kind of all convene for dinner.
Sounds good.
Yeah, it's nice.
And actually just crawling back to something you say, how on earth did you actually meet someone during the pandemic? I should probably find out.
So I met Stephen through a friend, a Persian friend, and it was quite a strange one because we ended up connecting online after that. And then he was like, I live in Durham. And I was like, oh, that's not too far. I live in Yorkshire and like London. And then, I don't know, we pretty much started dating quite quickly. But I didn't, honestly, I was just like, you know, COVID's come in, it's crap. I don't, you know, I'm feeling a bit lonely. Not more for just conversation, not
yes.
like, you know, for dirty text messages and exchanges. I'm not really into that. I'm too old to find that enthralling, should I say. But we've all been there, but like, I can't be bothered with that. So I just wanted some nice chat. So we had quite a lot of online dates, should I say, because for COVID, right?
Yeah.
So I'd be like, right, get these ingredients. I want to teach you how to make a proper spaghetti bolognese, not what you think you've been making. Like, you know, just joking, because he says I make spag bol for the boys, and I'm like, oh, how'd you make it? Babe, that's not a spag bol. Like, you know, so we'd cook and sort of cook together and then sit down and eat it. And I thought, actually, that's probably the best kind of contact, because you're having a proper face-to-face with somebody, granted that they're not in the room. But we had loads of lunch dates and dinner dates like that, and a couple of pissed ones, I think.
That actually sounds very intimate as well, isn't it?
Yeah, it was nice.
I don't distraction of a restaurant.
I think I regret the ones that involved gin online mostly because I just I remember waking up in the morning going, no. Like, we're just dancing and singing because, you know, COVID grabs hold, right? So
yeah.
There's a lot of kitchen discos. and then he just pretty much moved in. Just ended up started staying with me all the time that he was not with the boys, and he was working from home. And so
it's kind of incredible, isn't it? Looking back, you probably fast-tracked a few things because you're having that direct contact and communication without anything else going on, where you could just have all those big conversations, because you're not really messing around in your 40s, are you?
No.
You're like, is this going to work? If you're going to jump in, you jump in with all of you. It's like,
yeah, I didn't want to get married.
You didn't want to?
No. I think I didn't trust marriage.
How does it feel now?
Yeah, I love it, because the one thing that I remember listening to everyone that I was ever married and I respected in my life were like, it's no different. It's like you the same with a ring on your finger and a piece of paper. It's no different, and it is no different. I think Stephen made me less fearful of marriage because when I met him, I was, I don't want to get married. I don't want to get tied down. I don't want to. Part of the whole scare you away process.
Yeah.
So he was like, okay, all right, whatever you want to do then, that's fine. He was so laid back, and I kept thinking, he hasn't legged it yet. This is so strange. So he was very gentle and patient, and he said, listen, ultimately I could see myself marrying you, and I want to marry you, and I have a divorce behind me, but it still gives me the faith that one day I'll marry and, you know, it will be the right thing forever. I was like, okay, we'll see. And then one night on one of those kitchen discos, I got supremely drunk, which didn't take much, quite frankly. and he proposed. And I was like, what? And then I totally forgot, got into the dancing spirit, asked my mum as well if he could propose to me. And I woke up in the middle of the night and I was like, oh, my head is sore, my heart is throbbing. Oh my God, did I get engaged last night? And I remember, and I said to him in the morning, I said, did you propose last night? And he went, yeah. And I was like, I can't remember. I just remember it happening, but I can't remember what you said and how it went down. And he was like, don't worry, I filmed it. So, and I was just smashed, crying, and then getting up and just like dancing to like 90s classics in the kitchen. It was so funny.
That is funny. That's amazing. Yeah. So you actually got engaged during like a Zoom or something.
No, he was in. No, he's living with me. No,
oh, we
were having.
I thought you meant during the pandemic. You said the kitchen disco. I was like,
no, we were having the kitchen disco, but he was with me because it was like, lockdown, whoa, and we couldn't go anywhere. And I just said, I need a night out. But seeing as that's not going to happen, have a night in.
Okay.
So we just
played. I clarified that.
Lots of like
still amazing
dance tracks, and you know the recapturing of my youth, and he filmed a lot of that as well, which is quite embarrassing. It's a lot of rapping happening.
I actually do think being married does feel a bit different, but maybe that's just me.
Really?
Yeah.
Do you feel more grown up?
I mean, not so much like now, because we've been married like 17 years now. But I think that first year I was like, oh, it did feel like a shift. Maybe it's because my parents had divorced when I was little. I think I had to think a bit. I always knew I wanted to get married to Richard, but then I was like, oh, what is marriage really about? And then I think it felt like a lot of little things like, I don't know, stuff you might have bickered about or worried about kind of fell away, because the big, bold stuff is we are on the same side with the majority of things.
We made that decision.
And I think that mattered
to
me. But maybe, I guess everybody's got a different relationship with what that is. And that's quite personal, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I honestly, I don't give it too much thought. But some days I still am of the telling myself, I have a husband.
Yeah, yeah.
And I can't be somebody's wife.
Or you can
that's
be a bit like
crazy.
Yeah, or like, oh wow, I actually went really traditional. Like kind
I know,
of that's kind of
yeah.
surprise.
And I am quite traditional, and I think I'm quite surprised. And I think, you know, his parents were probably going, oh, you know, she's this famous chef, or that's what they think I am. Mm-hmm. It's not what I think I am. I'm like, oh my God, no, like I'm just a girl. Like, and then like probably thought I had all these like, well, I need this and I need this and I need this. And I spent like $3,500 on the whole party and like, you know, totally forgot the flowers until 2 days in advance of the wedding. There was only 20 of us. And, you know, it was
fun.
Yeah, just so not low rent, but just so chill and lovely.
Yeah.
And just, it really wasn't a faff at all. And they were like, so are you going to keep your name? I'm like, no, I'm Mrs. Lynn. But if I change my name on my books, nobody's going to buy my books, because they're going to be like, who's this booze? Sabrina Lynn? No, I don't know who she is. So I said, for books, if that's okay, can I keep? And he's like, oh my God, of course. Yeah, yeah. But I said, I'm going to literally change the day and marry you. I'm going to make sure everybody knows I'm Mrs. Lynn. And I am Mrs. Lynn, but for social and things like that, I'm Gayor Lynn. So people don't think, I don't follow this person. Who is that person? And, you know, so yeah, I'm quite traditional like that.
It's just so exciting that can all this can happen in such a relatively short space of time, but with such huge commitment and passion. And I think, I don't know, it just sounds like there'll be so many people, I'm sure, that will be so inspired about the idea of becoming a step-parent and just finding that family, proper family.
Yeah.
It's not just a role, it's a thing you're actually living.
It's a lifetime commitment.
It is.
Because
it
would cause instability for you to not think about it properly before you entered it.
Mm-hmm.
Not your instability or your husband's, that's a whole other ball game, but it would be a massive, you know, upheaval for the kids. So, you know, and there are times that I think, I can't do this, and it's just too much. Homeschooling was a joy I'd never experienced.
That's fun,
and
isn't it?
That I did have a complete like meltdown and was like, I can't do this. This is too much. We shouldn't get married. Oh my God. And I completely panicked and threw all my, you know, toys out the pram. But I think, moreover, like in my husband's and I's case, you know, I don't get to go on holiday with him unless the kids are with us, you know, until they're 18 or old enough to do their own things, because we have a commitment to show up, pick them up 50% of the times. So some days he drives 200 plus miles to pick up the kids, take them to school, you know, and then drive down to work and then pick them up from school and then drive back home. That's over 200 miles in a day.
Wow.
Clocked several times a week.
Wow.
And then taking them to football on weekends. Those are all his commitments that he has undertaken by having children and doesn't complain about.
Yeah.
Because that's what it is. And I can't either because that's what I've accepted.
Yeah.
And I understand that that's my, not my job because he never makes it my job. He never asks for anything, but it makes me want to do things for him and go, honey, let's look at the calendar and okay, that's half term, right? I'm going to be here. I won't be working. I'll make sure I'm there.
I was going
to
ask you, how's it changed your relationship with your work?
Yeah, so he would never ask anything of me. He would quite happily suffer in silence if he needed something. But I make sure that I'm around for the summer holidays, particularly. Christmas holidays is easy because, you know, we don't work around that time. But then the half terms are the doozies that catch me off guard.
Me too.
So I always try to be there around those times because even though he now actually works from home again, so it's a little bit easier, but I want the kids to sort of know that if their dad goes out, I'm there. You know, to at least sort of look after them, feed them. Feed them, probably the most important thing.
Has it changed anything about your cooking?
Yeah, so when they met me, they hated my food.
Oh, no.
Hated, and I was soul-destroying. And I remember...
That's brutal.
It was brutal because they've just... But when they met, they just basically didn't really say too much to me for months. It was an observation period, I now realise. But I was just like... Because I always said, you know, I always thought kids love me because people tell me kids love me. People are always like, oh, my daughter's not like that with anyone. She loves you and is always like, when's Auntie Sabrina coming round? And I had always been that person and I was not that person for these boys. They were just like, and every joke that I, because I make a lot of jokes and I tease the kids and like, you know, constantly like tell them like, yeah, well, obviously you have to pay rent if you're living here. And they're like, what? You know, I've always been that kind of to the cheeky person to have a little bit of banter with them. But yeah, basically just were like kind of giving me funny looks. I can show you what this face is, but it's like, oh, God. And I'm like, either they think I'm deeply uncool. They're like, oh, like so big cringe. And the food, unfortunately, it didn't fly. Like I had a pizza oven and, you know, these outdoor ones as a saviour, which, you know, yeah. I was lucky. Most people don't have one. I had one through COVID and they're like, it's burnt. I'm like, no, it's not burnt. That's what the Italians call bruciata. And they're like, it's burnt, you know, because they had a thing about burnt food that if that's a thing, you know, if food has black bits on it, it's burnt. They don't understand charred. They didn't eat this. They didn't eat that. They didn't like spice. They don't eat pork. They don't eat chicken. One doesn't eat cheese, but eats cheeseburgers and eats, that plastic cheese on things, and he's fine with pizza. But if you tell him that mozzarella's a cheese, he hits the roof. The other one peels the crumbs off fish fingers. Like there's so many quirks.
Yes.
And none of them match each other. So whenever you're making, you have to make about 17 different things. Now I am into a routine, and it is a routine because I hear that parents also get stuck in like 5 things on rotation. I'm in that. Accidentally, I'm also in that because I know it just has a success rating.
Yes.
So there's like the, you know, tandoori chicken thighs. And believe me, if every now and again I remind them that it's thigh meat, they'll probably go, ew, because it took me a long time to tell them I am not using breast in this house unless it's attached to a whole chicken. I want them to understand that chicken thighs are A, more economical for me. I'm a mum at the end of the day. And B, they taste better. So it took me a long time. But what I do love about them now is they have quite exotic palates and I've never forced them to eat anything. I've asked them to try because I don't want to create trauma for them. It is trauma. You know, we all have traumas of being forced to eat things.
All of us, yeah.
Can't eat
so
cottage cheese because my home ec teacher forced me to eat it. Can't, you know. So I just say, kid, I'd be really, like, if you tried it, I'd be really grateful. You don't have to like it. I'm not going to be cross, but I will be more impressed with you if you at least give it a try. This is what's in it. This, and this. There's nothing scary. Mm. Now they love spice. I do Jamaican nights, Thai food nights. You know, they eat jollof rice, this African red rice, but they call it red rice. They don't know what it is, but they love it. You know, we eat Persian, Iraqi, Indian. I'm constantly having nights of foods from a different culture, just this so they kind of understand.
This is good rotation. If yeah, this is rotation for you, I'm in.
I mean, I try. There's a, it's kind of like, they're like, okay, we're done now. Like, spag bol is not allowed in the house because they've had so much of it and they loved it that they're a little bit bored of it. So I do variations on. They love kebabs. They love kebabs, those kids. Ooh. And they love homemade burgers, which is like the easiest thing ever. Meat, smashed, salt, pepper, bun. We don't even bother with chips. That's enough for everyone.
Wow. I need to try that, actually. That's a really good idea. I'm getting some good ideas here. Have you, just to finish on there, is there anything that you've learned that would be helpful, if, that you'd wish someone had told you about the road to being a lovely stepmom? You are a lovely stepmom, I can tell that.
Thank you. Not sure they would agree. I would say really, really think about it in the early stages of your relationship. If you're with a partner, you're really going to have to put your whole plans with your new love aside. Like, you really will. It still frustrates me to this day that I cannot be alone with my partner for very long, for longer than 2 or 3 days. That's the tops. And it's not just the kids. My mother's there as well sometimes, you know, but with my mother, I can go, you know, you're going down to London. Great. Right. I'm just going to have a weekend with Stephen. Really think about that and how willing you are to be selfless. Because if you want to be selfish and you deserve to be selfish because maybe you haven't had that in your life, then put yourself first. I'm all for people putting themselves first because we don't really do that enough in life. So that's one factor. But like, where you see yourself losing your temper and maybe doing things the normal way that you've always done them, you might have to think about things quite differently. And if there are multiple stepchildren, I think it's really super important to understand each one's individual quirks, preferences, and build your discipline and also your structure of what's acceptable as love. Like, Ollie will let me cuddle him every now and again, and it'll become a bit of a joke because he'll be like, oh, get off. Connor will just go, look at me and go, I don't think so. So I'll still joke about it with him, but I will always, even if they don't let me be physically affectionate to them, which I understand because they're boys and they're like, gross girls, I still reinforce messages of love, even when perhaps at the beginning hadn't quite got there yet.
Yeah.
I think consistency, care, and also explaining why something's not okay in a really calm fashion, usually after the fact, because I need to calm down. You know, there's sometimes there's tears in my end and I go lock myself in a room and go, I'm going to, you know, kill him. I'm not obviously going to kill him. Please don't write in. but, you know, you have those feelings. And I always speak to Stephen about my feelings because I'll just go, oh, my God, I'm like in my head that like today they're particularly hyperactive, for example. They haven't been. But, you know, I would say like, oh, my God, I have visions of me like wanting to knock their heads together like coconuts. And he goes, oh, yeah, it's totally normal. Parents do that all the time. I'm like, do they? But because you're not a natural birth-giving parent, you're not sure. You feel guilt. There's a lot of guilt. So get ready for the guilt. Get ready for the feelings of inadequacy and incapacitation because you're not sure if you can do this or you're not sure if you're doing this right. There's a lot of that, but give yourself a break.
I think you basically also just described being a parent full stop.
100%. And I think...
lose all your free time.
Lose all your free time.
Occasionally want to kill them. Have to lock yourself in a room crying, saying, I can't do this.
I would have to say that I think full-time parents are going, it's a walk in the park 50% of the times.
They're really not. Honestly, I think everybody understands that it's complex raising a kid full stop. It's complex when you've got any relationship raising someone. It's a big deal.
Yeah.
But I think step-parent thing is a very delicate thing, but maybe there's also so much rewards. And I'm thinking when you were saying, you know, you got to your 40s and you were like, right, actually, that whole idea I had about, you know, getting married and the kids, I'm actually not that sure about that. I'm actually really happy. My life is sorted. And now you find yourself married, stepmother to 2 boys. But there's probably lots of things you learn about yourself in all of that.
So much. And I'm also just praying. I keep telling my husband, and I keep saying it in front of the boys because it's more of a joke than anything else. I'm just praying for you two to turn 18 and bugger off. And they're like, what? No, because, and I'm like, yeah, well, you know, when you're living one day, you know, when you're living with your girlfriend and they're like, no. I'm like, well, who are you going to be living with? dad. I'm like, in your dreams, dad and I are going to be in Thailand. Just so you know, setting the expectations, we are not going to be here anymore. You know, like, and genuinely, like, a part of me is like, do not get it twisted. I'm going to be like running off into the hills singing, you know, this is the dawning of the age of Aquarius when you guys are free, you know, because I do want my time. And I'm constantly, this is the other thing I will say to a step parent is, if you're coming into somebody that's already a ready-made family, you have to make sure you're being very genuine with how you feel about your needs and expectations. Now, I'm lucky enough that I've done whatever work I needed to understand that my needs are, it's okay to get my needs met as well if I'm providing for other people. And I do tell my husband, you do know that I'm biding my time with you. I'll give all my love to your boys and to you, because I expect at some stage in our lives for you to be free to travel with me and for us to do things that we couldn't do because we had small children in the house. You do know that. Like, I'm constantly, and yeah. He's like, yes, darling, I do know that. Of course, and I want those things with you. So make sure that your vision of you in 10 years' time lines up with the one that your partner has.
Yeah.
Because if it doesn't, you're going to feel like you put all this effort in waiting for your like sweet reward at the end of it and you didn't get it. And then what are you going to do?
Yeah, no, and resentment is an ugly thing. You want to avoid that at all costs. Just,
you know, it could be the end of a relationship for no reason. Be real with your expectations on both sides at the beginning. And then, you know, I think that's just standard advice for a relationship. Make sure you know what you're getting into. Be real about what you want. Don't be surprised if, you know, suddenly someone says, well, it was always this because you didn't discuss it, you know?
Yeah.
Discuss, constantly, constantly discuss things, even if they're uncomfortable.
Oh, you're a very smart woman.
I'm not, though.
You are.
I'm a bit of a basket case and I don't feel, I wish I could be like, yes, I'm actually writing my thesis on this step-parenting lark, but I'm not. I'm like literally learning every day how to deal with one boy or the other and their relationship with their father, but also how to guide their father into treating them in a way that works for me and supports my discipline and, you know, without making him feel uncomfortable either. So it's like, it's a minefield. Honestly, it's like a pinball of shit. Like, literally, it's like a pinball machine where everything you bump into has a temper tantrum or an attack or a personal offense taken or an upset or an apology. You know, it's constant. So,
but you're also in the complex bit with having boys both in double figures if they're 10 and 13.
Yeah.
That's the most complicated bit, isn't it?
Who knew? I never knew boys had I know girls can be vile as teenagers because I was one, you know, and it's also well written. Nobody tells you about this period. My husband has reliably informed me from 7 till 10 when boys get a shoot of hormones and start acting and acting like little twats, because that's kind of how I am. I'm a very foul-mouthed stepmom, but I don't let them ever swear. And I say, you know, when you're, because I'm a chef and I worked in the city, you know, come on, I can't be who I'm not. I can not swear at somebody's mum's house, but at home I'm quite awful. But I always, with them when they first went to swear, I went, I'm sorry, what did you say? They're like, I said, oh, I thought you said that. But then I thought, no, because you know that you're not allowed to say those things. And they're like, but you do. And I said, you're right, I do. And that's not great. However, I also pay the rent. I also own this house. I also pay the bills. And when you do that, you can do whatever you like. So I have that kind of relationship with them. And it's a mishmash. You know, there's 100 million things to figure out. But what I do know is my life is all the richer for having them in there. And I laugh about things I couldn't possibly have laughed about before because they weren't too quirky, inquisitive, downright cheeky boys, you know, before. But they are absolute smashers, the pair of them. And they are, you know, really, really lovely, even with all their mind-numbingly annoying flaws, which I'm reassured by other parents, by real parents, it's totally normal. I think I've probably got quite a good deal, really. So God help us, the teenage years.
I know. Yeah. Also, you know, all of that stuff, that's just a human being. We're all quite common. Living with people is always,
I just
want to
hide. I'm just already nervous because they don't know it's coming, but I know it's coming, you know, and I know exactly what I'm going to have to deal with. So that scares me a lot. But I think
we'll probably have to reconvene in like 10 years' time, two of us, and talk about that, how it all went. Yeah. Me too. I think the weird thing about the teenagers is, or the pre-adolescent, all of that, is sometimes they don't know why they're having the big feelings they're feeling.
Yeah.
They don't know it either.
No.
So when you sit like, think, look at them and think, why are you being so moody? They don't always know why it is. And also, do you remember that thing when you're a kid and, I don't know, you'd go to a restaurant and they'd maybe give you the kids' menu and you were like, no, I should have the adults' menu. But then you also want to be, if they gave you the adults' one, you'd want the kids' one.
Just you like don't that know hinterland. What you want. You don't want to be left out of anything.
And exactly. I want a foot in both camps.
I think that's the hardest thing. You really have to go over and above to make these kids feel comfortable, because if you give them black, they want white. If they want, you know, white, they want black. It's just crazy. There are no rules. And just because it's happened, it's turned out that way once, that doesn't mean that that's also going to be okay the next time.
Absolutely.
You give them chicken once, they love chicken. The second time, oh, I hate chicken. I'll never eat chicken.
I
never eat chicken. Like, why don't you remember?
You last week.
I'm like, oh my God, somebody just shoot me now. It would kinda. So,
we have all the same conversations in this house.
Yeah.
Well, thank you. You've given so much wisdom. And now I would like you to please cook for us.
Okay, good. See, here is a household where nobody's going to moan about my cooking. Like,
you're kidding me. I'm so ready for it. No, no moaning, just excitement.
Happy days. No, joy. No crazy palates to deal with.
No.
You do know I don't like this. Yes, Ollie, I know. Like, I tell you something really funny just before we go. My youngest son, he's got the weirdest habit. It's disgusting for everyone else at the table. Anytime you serve any kind of meat, he has to have mint sauce with it.
Oh.
He puts mint sauce over
it. I don't think that's that weird.
Everything is disgusting.
Well, firstly, I like mint sauce. And secondly...
On chicken, on sausages, on beef, on lamb, on everything.
I get that.
Really?
Yeah, I mean, mine was ketchup, but we're basically just adding something sweet. And also, I quite like the vinegariness of mint sauce as well.
And nobody at the table likes the vinegar. Nobody wants to sit next to him when he's opening the mint sauce.
Ollie, did you say? He can
sit next to me. Yeah, he just literally puts it on his spuds, just pours.
Oh, have you ever had it on baked potatoes? It's really good.
No. No.
Well, you know what? Don't knock it till you tried it.
Oh, geez.
Sorry.
Please don't be put off from step-parenting from anything I said. And please don't at me.
No, me neither. Especially not about mint sauce. Unless it's a thumbs up emoji. See, how lovely was that? And do you know what I really like about how Sabrina talks about it is it's completely the real deal of what step-parenting involved. It's interesting, actually, because it really made me think a little bit more about my step-parents and how it must have been for them stepping into my childhood, into my life. And it's so true what she says. It's actually not that I was thinking, oh, my step-mum or my step-dad is going to replace my dad or my mum. You're not thinking like that because you're like, well, I've already got my mum and dad. Their place is pretty darn set. I think it's more about, yes, that subconscious thing of you thinking, are they taking the attention away from me? Are they taking my parent away from me? Because particularly in the fallout of, you know, a passionate marriage leads to a passionate divorce, as my mum always said. And in the fallout of that, your relationship with your now single parent is really significant. You want to know that when you're with your mum or with your dad, that time is special and you're having that time together. So having a step-parent that really understands that you need that from them is really... It's really lovely to hear it articulated. And I don't know if I really thought about that aspect of step-parenting until I heard Sabrina talk about it. But also how lovely that she was so clear about the boundaries and about the fact that she was coming in to help parent rather than just be like their dad's girlfriend. You know, she obviously thought, okay, we're gonna have a family life here, and it's going to be consistent, and it's going to care about you, and it's going to care about the kind of person you're growing into. You know, obviously, you know, the tone was set by the dad because that's his children, but I just thought that was really great that she kind of had a clear idea of how they were going to be a family and find their new dynamic. And it sounds like it's been a really happy thing. So I really like that. And that actually concludes the whole of this series. Can you believe it? That's the end of the series 8 now. Wow, it's like 2.5 years of these conversations. Thank you so much. I really, really, I know I bang on about this all the time, but I really do love doing my podcast so much. I get very, very excited about it. I'm always thinking of new people. I'll read a new story. I'll see something on my phone. I'll hear someone talking about someone. I'll meet someone at work and I'll think, wouldn't that conversation be great to share? And I've already got a lot of lovely, lovely guests already secure in the diary for the new series. But, you know what I'm going to say here, please keep your suggestions coming to me. I really, really care about what you think. And I also have had some of my favourite interviews with people that weren't my idea. And I do read through all the comments and I think, oh, yeah, good idea. I check people out. I try and get hold of folk. You know, it's sometimes people don't want to do podcasts. That's fine. But isn't it so exciting when they do? Because then I'm like, yes, lucky me. I get to sit down with this incredible woman and have a good old chat. And I've loved it. And I've got some amazing people lined up already. And I want to say a big thank you to all the people that helped make the podcast possible. So my team, as you know, it's small, but it's mighty. We have the brilliant Ella May, who does all my artwork and has done from day one. So that is the aesthetic of the podcast, and she's a complete delight to work with. So thank you very much, Ella May. Love your illustrations every week. I have my wonderful husband, Richard, who is my editor. So he goes through all this stuff. He makes it sound good. He takes out the coughs, the chair scrapes, the banging on the tables, the kids in the background. He makes it sound lush. And my fantastic producer, Claire Jones, who's been with me since day one. She has totally understood, you know, completely like what we wanted to do with this. We've both been on the same page. She's enthusiastic. She's incredibly professional. She's why the chats actually sound proper rather than just me talking into my phone like I do a lot of the time with my introductions. She's brilliant at all that. She does the most beautiful notes after every episode so that it's all clear for everybody working on it, what's going on. And I think most significantly, actually, she's a proper cheerleader. Every time I have an idea about a guest, I'll send it over and she'll be like, whoop, whoop, sounds like a good one, and comes back with really good ideas herself. So thank you very much, Claire. But obviously the biggest thank you of all, well, my darling, it's you. Thank you for giving me your time. Thank you for being part of this lovely little community. Every time someone comes up to me and says they love the podcast, it makes my heart do a little jump. I absolutely adore it. And I will keep thinking of new folk. There's so many more people out there. So series 9 will be back. The latest will be January. If I'm really organised, I might do it before Christmas, but I think I might just leave it and do it in the new year. I feel like new year, new series makes sense to me. And let me get my ducks in order and do some recordings for you before then. So if I don't speak to you beforehand, have an amazing Christmas. I hope you have a really peaceful season and have some lovely people around you. And thank you for lending me your time and your ears. And yeah, lots of love to you and have a great time wherever you're up to. And I will see you on the other side. Bye.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
This is the summer to expand your horizons. You've had enough staying home. You've had enough confinement. It's time to explore. But before you set foot out the door, set foot in the ultimate travel shoes from Allbirds, like the breathable, silky, smooth Tree Runner, the responsive foam and extra grip of the Tree Dasher, or the classic low-top look of the Tree Piper. Allbirds has a shoe ready for whatever adventures you have planned. Whether you're traveling to the ends of the earth or settling in for a staycation, you need a shoe that's versatile enough to go with any outfit, durable enough to wear over any terrain, and lightweight enough to make packing a breeze. Being made from insanely comfortable, breezy eucalyptus fiber is a plus, too. When you wear Allbirds tree shoes, you're in vacation mode before you even leave the house. They're the only shoes your suitcase needs. Boarding pass? Check. Passport? Check. The perfect travel shoe? Check. Find your perfect pair of Tree Dashers, Runners, Pipers, and more at Allbirds.com. That's allbirds.com.